Vision Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Today is January 25th, 2017. Tick tock, tick tock. And we had on the radio with us our friend, a returning friend of the show, Heidi Lampert. Her dad grew up near Hanford. Heidi, are you with us? I actually thought the call did drop, so let me give her a call right back. She's sort of prepared. Unfortunately, my guests are kind of prepared for this, so we just let them know beforehand that they're probably going to get kicked off as soon as the bumper music starts. Hey, so you got kicked off as soon as the bumper music started, correct?
Yeah, it did. It just totally hung me up.
It didn't do it the last time, so whatever. Let's move on. So thanks for joining us, Heidi. Heidi's dad grew up around Hanford. She grew up around the Hanford-Richland area. Had to move away because basically she's an anti-nuker, is willing to speak the truth about nukes. That's really, and that's one of the things we want to discuss, right, Heidi?
Yeah, and how it's oppressed, how we're oppressed from speaking our truth.
Yeah, well, that's how they do it. That's what abusers do, is they oppress their victims, right?
Yeah, and I'm really excited today because of this Women's March this week. There's been a lot of hot conversations, you know, about white privilege and white supremacy and capitalism. And it's just really triggered me about nukes and nuclear science and how nuclear science is truly a weapon of capitalism and a tool for white supremacy. And it's caused fear throughout the world. It's bullied. We've used it to bully the world. And how are we ever going to overcome it? How are we ever going to stop nukes? And the best idea, the greatest idea that I've heard so far is to decolonize. And that's a really big term, to decolonize, you know. I'll be honest, I'm not an expert, you know. I'm not an expert at all. But the way that it was explained to me was that, do you want me just to get into it, Lonnie?
Yeah, because this idea of decolonization is an interesting concept. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. And again, I'm not an expert, but the way that it was explained to me was that, nuke weapons protect capitalism. And capitalism, you can imagine, is like a house. And there's three pillars. There's three pillars of hierarchy or heterosexual patriarchy that holds this house up. And these three pillars are kind of known as the three pillars of racism because they're about how, for capitalism, you have to go and invade an indigenous land. And you go to an indigenous peoples, and you don't really consider them human. They're part of the land. And so for centuries, we've gone into land, and I say we, as in white people. It was the Romans, it was the Greeks, whatever race you want to call them. But we went and we conquered these indigenous lands and stole them, killed the people, and really believed that extinction was okay because all we wanted was their land and resources. And the second pillar is similar to that with the black history of our country and then the world of enslaving black people, about that acceptance so we can just go into some place and take people from their homes. And again, it's that kind of thought process that they're not human. And then the third pillar is the Asians, and they actually call this the Orient, the Oriental or Orientalism pillar. And it was really interesting. She said, you know, they called it the Orient because, again, that gave you in perspective an us against them. You're orientated yourself against, away from this culture of people. And so because you're always separated, it's still always okay to war. You have to war. You have to have violence in order to support capitalism. The whole system is about oppressing people.
Now, it's interesting that you say that, because I've had these thoughts in the last few days, and I just saw a book that I haven't ordered, but I don't have the time to read it, so I didn't order it. But the whole theme of the book, as I was exploring this idea, sort of searching around to see if I could find some research papers and stuff, the whole concept is that capitalism and democracy do not go hand in hand. In Europe, in Sweden, they have basically a socialistic democracy, because democracy lends itself to socialism, taking care of the greater good.
Right. But capitalism is about profit.
And our country was not built on capitalism. We were not a capital. I mean, the Constitution is not a cap. Doesn't say we're capitalists.
You're right.
Our Constitution is really about taking care of the general welfare of our preamble. I mean, that's the whole thing, the whole concept of it. And we've gotten, and actually, I was actually reading in the reading I'm doing on my YouTube channel last night. They mentioned the McMahon Act that was passed in 1947 that controls the nuclear energy, that gave basically nuclear weapons in oversight to the Congress and not to the military, which since the CIA has been totally shit canned, as we know. But the bottom line is the whole idea is that in along with nuclear came this thrust of hyper capitalism in our country.
And I guess it's hard to say what came first, the nuclear science or the capitalism. And maybe, you know, that I can't answer that question, you know. But what I can say is that it definitely is being used in the last 50 years to defend capitalism and put fear in a lot of indigenous peoples for their countries and for their society, you know, not even to mention our own.
Look what Donald Trump just did yesterday. He signed that executive order to impose the XL pipeline on America, along with the DAPL and a bunch of other pipelines. And he also he fast-tracked the whole thing of doing nuclear and coal. I mean, this is the neoliberal agenda that they forced on South America 40 years ago, because they couldn't do it here in the United States.
All the checks and balances have been removed. There's no checks and balances. There's no system in place anymore in America.
Well, there could be if our Congress would find their courage. I mean, if the Congress would step up and say no to these people and be willing to get murdered, because that's what, think about it. I don't know if I put it in my YouTube channel, but I was thinking about it afterwards. I did, actually. I made a rant last night about all this. Off the top of my head, I made a list of the things that he's already done to harm the weakest in our country. But if our Congress, think about it, Heidi, if our Congress really decided that we're going to cut off the funding to the CIA and we're going to really rework this black hole budget thing, and this is just not serving America, how many of our congressmen would have accidents, suicides, car broken? I mean, the CIA would not go down quietly if the Congress decided to, take their power back.
Right. I mean, we're not looking at peaceful times at all, Lonnie. This is a very violent time.
Well, they're setting it up to be violent. It does not have to be violent. We had 5 million people in the street who do not want violence.
Right.
The violence comes from them.
Right, because the violence supports capitalism. That's a system, you know, and we've all, it's so ingrained in us. It's so many centuries, so many countries. So many invasions. It's just gone on and on and on, to the point where we don't know any different, and we think it can't be any way different.
Right.
And that's where the whole decolonizing comes in, because the idea of the decolonizing is to give a land back to the indigenous people and let them own and manage and have their land. Now, you could say, well, we did that with the Native Americans in here, but that's not true. We know we didn't keep treaties. We stole all the resources and then gave them back the land. And we took away so many resources. Regardless, they still have been decolonizing. Regardless, they still try to have their own systems in place to maintain. And I get really excited when I think about Standing Rock. And I think about the indigenous grandmothers and the women that are at Standing Rock who are teaching ancient ways of war. And those ancient ways of war are peaceful. And they're about praying and singing and dancing. Now, in the capitalist world, we kill those people. We conquer them. We destroy peaceful people. And that's where I'm at, you know, just now. I'm at this place where I come from Hanford. My dad was a nuclear scientist. He was white. So we had white privilege. And we grew, you know, we were from an Indian reservation and lived next to Native Americans. But it didn't matter because of how we looked on the outside. And when, with that knowledge of while I was at Hanford, I realized about how there was so many migration workers. There was a huge population in the 70s and 80s, mostly Mexican migration workers. And they would bring these people in and let them work for awful rates and awful living conditions. And then the winters were usually really bad, and so they would migrate somewhere else to work, like California, and then come back. So there was a lot of movement. But in that movement, with all of that happening, is when I started to realize first about what the nuclear waste site was about and how big it was, and about how the water was contaminated, the air was contaminated. And they didn't really have a firm grasp, or so they said, of where the contaminations were going. And so I thought it was really interesting, though, that the migrant workers were usually housed downwind, and they were usually downriver. And I know I've shared with you also about how I realized around Hanford, it's all potato farms and dairy farms. Some of the nation's largest potatoes and dairy is up to the borders of Hanford. And so that's where this white privilege, white supremacy...
Wait a minute. You're telling me that the borders of the potato farms and the dairies is right next to Hanford? It's not even like 10, 15 miles away when you're talking about this?
Well, so the Hanford Reservation, you know, is much larger than the CGS reactor. So the CGS reactor is a piece that's leased on Hanford on the river. And Hanford, I can't remember how many square miles it is. I want to say it's 500 square miles. It's a good hour to drive from say, the south side to the north side of the Hanford Wildlife Refuge. If you were to look up the Hanford Wildlife Refuge on a map, it's really big, Lonnie. It is really big. But we also have to remember that for decades, they just threw waste everywhere. So not everything is documented where waste is. And we also know that there's been radioactive rabbits and wildlife that has left the reservation for decades. Birds and bugs and, you know, everything that could fit through a chain link fence or jump over it or go underneath it has not been contained within Hanford for the last 60 years. So when I say right next to Hanford, I'm saying, you know, they have the waste field. They have maybe a couple miles. Well, honestly, when I say this now, I'm thinking of White Bluffs. White Bluffs is in Pasco. It's in the east side of Hanford. And it is along the river, and you can buy housing right next to the White Bluffs. And so you really are literally within miles of the waste field.
Wow.
But again, like, how far does it go in the air? How far does it go when it rains? All of those things, they're the farms on the east side.
This is the real common theme, though, across the nation, the complete disregard for human life. from the nuclear industry. Complete disregard for the future. They knew they had this toxic waste is something that they have no idea, no concept what to do with it except make weapons. And they continue to drum it down our throats.
Yeah. Yeah, and that again goes back to that whole three pillars of those people that are allowed to go to extinction. You know, if the capitalism system lets people be disposable because they're workers or slaves or they're just supposed to be stolen from and just taken and killed, there's definitely no respect for life in white supremacy except for one kind of life and one sort of person's life. And so I guess one of some of the things I wanted to share today was when I'm told that I have white privilege, I automatically take defense to that because I've had a very diverse life and lived, you know, in many different cultures and all of this. And so, of course, I take defense to it. But then I started thinking about it, and I started thinking about in the 80s when I started marching and how it was a very white thing for me to do. There was a lot of white people in the streets, and I have to tell you, I was raised with fear for speaking out. In Eastern Washington, you don't speak out. You don't protest. I never had seen a protest. My entire childhood, growing up in the Tri-Cities at Hanford, I had never seen a protest. It wasn't until the mid-80s did I see that people were trying to block trains from taking and bringing nuclear waste to Hanford that I started to realize there was a resistance. But again, these were white people, and I think about it, and I think about how traumatized and murdered people of color have been, especially over nuclear sciences. I mean, and a good example of this is the shootings of Leonard Peltier and John Trudell and the Native Americans in the Dakotas in the 70s. And when you look up, if you look up Trudell's history, I mean, he took Alcatraz. He did crazy protests that were awesome in the 70s just to get treaty rights acknowledged and the abuse of that. And when with him doing that, people died. People were shot by our government. And when we think of the civil actions with Martin Luther King and the people in the streets, I mean, people died. So in the 70s, people were being killed for objecting, for protesting.
That's why they won't let Pelletier out of the prison, because if they do, he would win. He was wrongly convicted. The facts are all out there. This man, nobody knows about his story. He is not a criminal in any way.
No,
but they are not letting him out. They are not going to let him out. There is no forgiveness from the abuser.
Because Obama knew that Leonard would go straight to Standing Rock, and he would participate in the decolonization at Standing Rock. And that is too threatening to capitalism. The only weapon we have against capitalism is to decolonize. And the only way we can decolonize is to give indigenous people back their lands, give them the governance to govern their lands, and to listen and stand by their leaders and learn the ancient ways. We, you know, I consider myself more, I joke a lot, actually, that I'm a mutant. My genetics are mutant refugee. You know, I have European descent that was indigenous to Europe, and those people were conquered centuries ago. You know, I have Russian, I have indigenous in America, all kinds of race in me, but I'm a mutant of these races. I can't claim a single race, and other than that I come from a mutant race. And sometimes that offends people. They're like, oh, I can't believe you said that. But then I say, you know what? I grew up around the Tri-Cities. My genetics are altered. I'm not going to deny that any more than I'm going to deny my white privilege, you know, that I have blonde hair and blue eyes. And so people look at me and they're just going to assume my stances and my heritage. That's the world we live in right now. And so my message to everyone is we got to quit labeling each other. We need to start talking to one another. And we need to listen to one another. If we're ever going to, the only way that we're going to break capitalism is to create a new system. If we take down capitalism, we will replace it with more capitalism. I mean, and you could say democracy. I like the words of democracy, and I guess I don't have faith in democracy right now because I feel like it's been so corrupted and co-opted. But I do believe that if we stand by each other and work together to decolonize, that we might have a chance. And with all of that, we still have to remember that nuclear science will be here for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. We've colonized our Earth with nuclear science.
Yeah, I will tell you what, Heidi, I think that you're right on about this and the name calling. Look, they pay people. Breitbart calls us, has labeled us libtards. You know, then you get the other part calling people, you know, what do they call the alt-right? I mean, neo-Nazis. I mean, the name-calling, the bickering is intentional to keep us from coming together and realizing that we have more in common than we have less apart, and that it's okay for us to disagree how to achieve the right ends. But to disregard treaties, the Standing Rock, the Sioux tribe just responded to Trump's pipe order, you know, order about the pipelines. These people, they are going to resist. And then, you know, my friend Ed Osworth, he said, he and his friend in India sent him a message the other day and said, you know, the word here, he was reading in some blogs in India, they are attempting to set up the Arab Spring in America so they can roll out a militaristic state and just take over. I mean, the CIA is completely spinning out of control, crazy, and so is the FBI. That guy Comey, I mean, Trump literally blew him a kiss the other day.
No, I get it. I get it. I understand that it's out of control, and I understand that we're preparing for war.
I'm not preparing for war. I refuse. I will not war with them, but I will resist. I'm not going to use their language.
You're a warrior, Lonnie. You're a peace warrior, and you're using communication as your weapon.
I do not like to be labeled anything. Like, that's one of the things Kevin used to say, well, we've got my little army, and I would call him up like, dude, I am not going to participate. I'm picky about words. The words you say to yourself matter. It matters if you call yourself a warrior. A warrior implies war. If we want peace, we need to come up with a different word, a peacier maybe. I don't know what the word is, but we need to figure out a different word, because I'm not calling myself a warrior. I'm not saying I'm going to be part of any effing army. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to participate in the war mentality. I think we really have to challenge that.
I do. I love that. I love that challenging the dualism. And that goes to break down that bully paradigm, because that's like what we talked about the last time I was on, about how if you let yourself be a victim, then you let them be the bully, and then it just goes back and forth. And so I hear what you're saying. I hear you saying you're not even going to take part of that system.
No, let me read to you. This speaks to what you're saying. This comes directly from the Standing Sioux tribe. This is their statement. It says, today, Trump announced an executive order on DAPL, which not only violates the law, it violates tribal treaties. Nothing will deter us from our fight for clean water. We will be taking legal action, and we will take this fight head on. We urge you to fight and stand tall beside us. And you know how many people are going to stand beside us? He says, call your congressional representatives and let them know you do not stand behind today's decision. That is really, we have got to, I mean, Heidi, did you hear that the president actually turned off the White House phone numbers because so many people were calling?
I was just going to tell you that they did do that, and my friends are asking everyone to send postcards to support the Postal Service and flood their offices with physical mail.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the other thing, is they can turn off their phones, but they can't really turn off delivery, and and they can't really deny bags and bags and bags of postcards of angry people. And I'm for any kind of demonstration, protest. I mean, I really believe that just talking about it makes changes. I believe just us talking to each other. I mean, this weekend with the Women's March, I just saw so much division. It was so interesting to be, like, so happy to see women finally get out of their houses and get on the streets and then come home and see all of this opposition and upset with one another. And it really took it really wore me out. It really took
something
out of...
What do you mean, upset with one another? What do you mean, one another? Which one another are you talking about?
Well, there was a lot of stances of, say, there was a lot of, the one that offended me so bad, Lonnie, was a hashtag. It said, not my march. And it went on about how this woman was American. She was treated equal. She had all of her rights. She thought that she had no, that only the women who were marching were whiny, and that we were all just limited ourselves. And then it goes on to a couple paragraphs about
you
how
cannot get upset about this, Heidi. You do realize they pay people to do this. They find people to write the most. So you have to just shake. Number two agreement, man.
So
don't take it personally.
I get it, Lonnie. No, but my years of experience of seeing trolls troll us, you know, about nukes, I recognized this as a troll. But it was so hurtful how many people bought it, you know? And many women were like, yeah. And I had to challenge those people. And that's where I'm inviting everyone. When you see it, challenge it. If someone say it. Yeah. If someone's sitting there arguing that they don't have white privilege, it's like, quit fighting about it, okay? Own it. Like, that's what I was trying to say. I'm owning my white privilege.
Right.
It gave me the confidence that I had to stand in the middle of the street and protest.
You know what's hilarious? That you don't see black people saying, I have black privilege.
Because they
like,
don't. They don't. You know what
this
I mean?
This is the really hilarious part about that whole, well, what are you talking about? We're all treated equally. No, we are actually not.
No, we're not. And there's some, if you look online, there's some amazing books. I just lost one, something about knapsack, something a woman wrote in the 80s about a knapsack. I'm going to find the name of it. But yeah, there's a lot of good conversations, and there's a lot of dialogue going around about white privilege. And I guess, and if you're not white, there are privileges. I mean, that's where racism, my friend was Jill was teaching me this weekend, like racism is very vertical, white being the top, black being the bottom, but then there is a horizontal, there's a lateral oppression that happens even as you go up and down that. And an example is like the Irish in America, there was several prejudices against the Irish, and people would treat people with Irish descent as though they were less than. That's just one example. Or another one is India. There's a caste system in place, even though a lot of that has to do with color. It has to do with what culture you were born into. I mean, there's examples of this all around the world. And the way we just have to stop participating in it. And the way we stop is first acknowledging our white privilege, and second, using it to our advantages. And I think of, when I say that, I do think of the 70s, and I think about the civil rights movement. I mean, they talk about the three waves of feminism, and that first wave of feminism was just to get women to be acknowledged as equals. Well, that was white privilege. It was white women who were acknowledged as equals, but people of color weren't. And so then that second wave of feminism came in the 70s, where we were like, no, we are all equals. And white women with white privilege used their privilege to march in the streets besides their sisters. I'm like Gloria Steinem, and I mean, there's too many for me to list. So then now we're in this third wave of feminism. And now we're in this third wave that we can see, like, this resistance has always been led by women, white women. We need to let the women of color, the indigenous women, lead our resistance. We need to listen to them. And that's going to take trust. That takes trust because we've been taught through capitalism to control, and that we control things. And so I think it's really hard for people to say, okay, I'm going to shut up. I'm going to shut up. I'm going to listen to what you have to say. And sometimes what they have to say is angry and they are mad. Let them be. That's their right to be angry. If you were in their place, you'd probably be pretty pissed off too. And it's that acceptance and willingness for us just to shut up and listen to one another that I think we're going to get through this. Because
I do too. And I think this is kind of, in a way, I was thinking maybe this is what we need. Maybe this is like the laundry, you know, with Trump. Trump is the culmination of what the neoliberals wanted to bring to America in the 80s. You know, they really challenged Clinton. this was this whole idea, progress for the American century or whatever they call it. This is their plan. He came in and they are just slobbering all over themselves. However, the resistance has started already. The scientists are already planning a march on Washington. The
Yeah.
National Park Service has created an alternate Twitter account. It's called Alt USNAT Park Service. I mean, the people in America, these neocons might think that they can just shove this down our throats. What they have forgotten is that Americans fundamentally, at our core, believe in two things. I think this, as an American speaking, I can talk for myself, I guess only, but I think we have a great inherent belief that it is our fundamental right to free speech, that we have a, they cannot shut us up no matter what, and
Right.
that we are one people. They are not going to divide us. We might have racism. It's like I was in the South one day, like one of my friends, this was, God, 30 years ago, I guess. He's like, well, they might be black people, but they're my black people. Like, the thing is, we are all one people. We are not divided. And what happens is it is the capitalism that divides us. These, I do not know how people can think that Breitbart is not wholly owned by the corporations to promote their hateful agenda. Because this guy, Steve Bannon, I've heard people saying, well, Steve Bannon, I like him. He's an alternative guy, but Steve Bannon is an outright racist and a misogynist. We are living in a time when hypermasculinity has hit its tilt. And it is
Right.
time for us to take that back and let us get back into balance if we've ever been in balance.
Right. And how to go against the white supremacy. That's where the balance is off, and the racism gets it, there's this weird racism about that. And I think that we're at a point in time where there's enough mutant refugees like me, who are so many crosses of different
Yeah.
races, that the white supremacist, it's not working on us. It doesn't, we don't feel that unity. You know what I mean? I can only speak for myself. I don't feel that unity,
Well, we don't feel like I mean, this is the thing. You and I acknowledge that we have white privilege, but we're not exactly proud of it. We'd rather have a system that's more equal. And if that means us having less, then I'm willing to have less. And that's the conversation that needs to happen. Equality is when we are all respected with equal rights within the justice system. I mean, your economic gains comes and goes, but the reality is when you have within the justice system, economies roll by through justice. It's not the other way around. The economy doesn't rule out the justice. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not because we have this great capitalistic society that we have a just and fair system. We have a just and fair system that when everybody is accounted for and respected. Right now, we have people dying in the streets every day in this country. One in five children goes to bed hungry. One in five. We are if the results of these neocon, and this is the really, let me, I'm getting all hypered up about this one because it really gets me excited. I'm just so angry about it. They say, well, finally we're going to have jobs. Well, really, we've had 8 years of Republicans blocking jobs. We've had 8 years of Republicans refusing to do a jobs bill to rebuild our infrastructure, to do anything that helped America so they would make Obama look bad. And then the incoming president's wife refuses to sleep in the White House because black people slept there. I mean, it is beyond comprehension the disregard these people have for our country.
Right. And so when I pose this to my friend Jill, she says, well, it's only through extinction that they're going to go away. It's only, and we don't have to wish that they die now, but we'll go aside from that. But it's the idea that these people with these old beliefs and that are holding up this structure, this ancient structure, they are going to die. They are. We're all going to die, but they're going to die. And those ideas will die with them. And so we can maybe fight them for so long now, and we'll use a lot of energy fighting them, but really our strength is uniting with one another and sharing these new ideas and sharing these new options and teaching each other and teaching the children that, because eventually it will become a more popular system than the one that we live in. And right now, like you said, there's all these people in disparity and these people who aren't getting resources and food. And we're told there's not enough. We're told that, you know, not everybody can get some. And I disagree with that. I think that it's that goes back to that how we choose to live. When you look about how white privileged people live, and I'm sure there's people of other cultures who are also excessive in America, but I'm going to use the word white privilege because of their majority of how they live in America. They have huge houses. They heat them year-round. They buy so much crap. They make so much garbage. I mean, look at our footprints that we're making on this earth. If we could start using less plastic, using less energy, then we could have more resources for everyone. But do you see how that concept is anti-capitalist? They don't want to teach you to use less. They would rather teach you to conquer the people lesser than you so they can make more and make more money.
It's considered un-American not to be greedy, to be honest. It's really, when you talk about, you know, I've said this in conversation with people, like, that I really believe that everybody is taken care of, they're like, well, that's socialist. That's not American. Well, that's not true because, well, we have to confront this concept, though, when we're talking about these, I think. Our foundation of our nation was built upon murder, death, kill. We moved across. The difference between South America and North America is in South America, they went there just to pillage and rape and oppress and extracted all. Very few Europeans invaded the South American continent. They went to Brazil, but very few. It's mostly the indigenous people that live there that have been oppressed, and all of their resources were sent to Europe. In America, the concept was murder, death, kill. They saw the natives were considered less than human beings. They rolled across. I mean, the idea of scalping and skinning came from the Europeans. It was not a Native American concept. I mean,
sure.
So we have, there's a sense of, I guess, social guilt when you start talking about this, because we really, and true to force, this is what I posted this on Facebook yesterday. Dakota Access Pipeline, the treaty has been completely ignored. Trump right. probably believes that's an American thing to do. He probably feels that that's, these, of course, we had to make these treaties because otherwise you have to, these people refused to give up. They wanted some land, so they refused to give up unless you placate them. So they give them a little place of land that they're like, okay, you can have the land, but we're going to do what we want anyways. That is still murder, death, kill.
Yeah, and that, again, is the first pillar of capitalism. Capitalism will not survive without that. Without that murder, kill, enslave, and taking and stealing of, that's again where we have. I mean, that goes on. Capitalism affects housing, education, food, electricity, healthcare. All of those things are affected by capitalism, and then they're affected again by the white supremacy of it, the race, and that's where. You know, a lot of people don't have access to those things. And that goes back to what white privilege is. Is white privilege isn't usually something that we've done in our lifetime. It's not about us personally, how we're walking the earth. It's about how the world, the culture has been conditioned decade after decade after decade, for century after century, that there are just certain thoughts that are ingrained in us. And some of that, an example of that is like racial profiling. The idea that someone of color is more likely a criminal than someone who's not. Now, this was a big deal when I grew up and when I was in my 20s. Like, a lot of people I knew that were my peers that had dark hair and dark skin, they got tickets. They got pulled over. And I never did. So how can I deny that I didn't get some white privilege? I can't deny it. And that white privilege is about that core, you being born just with that confidence. It doesn't matter how poor you are. It doesn't matter how mistreated you've been. If you're white, most likely you've had access to more information. And another really great example is the TV. Let's say you're a kid and you're poor and you're beaten, okay? It doesn't matter what race you are. And you're just neglected. And you turn on that TV, you're going to see a lot of pretty white people, a lot of pretty happy white people. So if you have any kind of traits that you can identify with those people, it's going to help you feel like you can rise above it, you can get better. But if you're a person of color, you don't identify. You don't identify with that. Instead, you're identifying that those people are the people that get to be happy.
You know, people ought to watch that doc. Have you seen the documentary Tough Guys? G-U-I-S-E, Tough Guys. It is astounding. It talks about this whole issue of projection and how we perceive ourselves and the color issue. It is an intentional thing, again, used by the capitalists to oppress us. The hyper-masculinity is really an intentional thing. It's an intentional thing to oppress us, to keep the capitalistic system thriving. Heidi, I was one of those poor white kids. And my dad came from Texas, and he literally told me that, you know, we were blessed. Like, God liked white people better, period. That's why black people had such horrible lives. He said that to me when I was a little kid.
Yeah, and then I believe you. My dad was one of the most racist people I know. And he was a minority of a minority. You know, different people come from different minorities and can still be very racist. It's a system. It's a system of thought, and that is taught. We teach each other, and we teach each other how to approve it. We don't teach each other how to question it and how to fight it. The book I was telling you about, I just want to tell you real quickly, it was Peggy McIntosh in 1988. She wrote a piece called White Privilege, Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack. And I have not read this essay, but I have read women's take on this. And again, it's about the idea that this is so much bigger than us. And the way that I relate to this is about Hanford. Because to me, when you go to Hanford, the scientists that are usually white, or, you know, most of the scientists, are very righteous. And they completely believe that we need nuclear science. They will defend it to the end. And then you see these migrant workers who are actually working in the land, on the farms that are downwind from the repercussions of the science, and they're allowed to die from cancer. They're allowed to die because they're migrant workers. And the other complication of that is because they're migrant workers, they're constantly moving around. So when they do get cancer, they don't even know it was from Eastern Washington, because it happens 5-10 years later, 3 years later, and they're somewhere else.
They don't even have any idea that they've been exposed.
Yeah. Well, and then this is what also just really makes me angry, is that in the 80s and 90s, we did know. We did know. By then, we had been, you know, seeing all this paperwork. All these things came public about Hanford. We did know people were dying. And instead of Hanford owning it, they said, no, it's not us. It was the farm, the chemicals that you use for pesticides and herbicides that gave you cancer. Or they said, did you smoke? Oh, it's because you're a smoker is why you got cancer. So there was all this diversion against and away from them. And still to this day, when you go to Hanford, it's usually white people who defend it, who say that they need it. They're there for the cleanup. They're making it better. It's never a conversation about how it's bad for the earth. It's not a science that's understood. That the science that we've used in the last 60 decades has been detrimental to killing our earth and killing our oceans. There's no apologies. They're not like, oh, well, maybe we shouldn't have given Japan, you know, sold Japan all those reactors and put them on fault lines. They should know better. They knew better. Again, that's another form of genocide for capitalism. Is they go to Japan. Why is Japan such a nuclear country? It doesn't make sense to me. It's like one of the one countries that shouldn't have nukes.
They did it intentionally. It was a form of oppression. Again, what we're dealing with is oppression. I mean, this is really the battered wife syndrome. I've said this many times on my YouTube channel. America acts like a battered wife. We are suffering from the battered wife syndrome. We are afraid to call out our oppressors. We modify and qualify because, like we said earlier in the show, people are afraid of the CIA. Our elected officials are scared to death. That's why they click their heels and say Sieg Heil. They are not willing to leave the batter. They do not want. They know that we are going to get pummeled. When we were talking earlier about, you know, the Arab Spring, they're setting us up to have what Arab Spring type of revolution, because they want it. They want violence in the street. They want that.
But we have to be prepared to, first off, one thing that the tool that we have is the nonviolence.
Exactly.
We understand that the only way we're going to get it past this is through nonviolence. And that's what we have to remember when they tell us that we're rioting and we're being violent, and people, that's where I see my family and my peers go, oh, you are rioting in the street. What makes that right? You can't just go breaking windows. Well, most likely that never happened. Or if it did happen, it was planted. Like, don't believe that so easily. The best way is be on the damn streets yourself. If you're in the march and you see nobody is rioting, no one's breaking windows, and you see the cops start shooting the protesters in the face, I mean, that's what's happening. That happened in Portland on the Inauguration Day. Completely peaceful people standing off the road in Pioneer Square. The police completely went around them, so they had nowhere to go, and at one time they all shot into the crowd.
What? They just literally attacked the people for no reason?
Yes, and there is Jesse Spoonberg. If you go to his Facebook site, he was live streaming. He has video. He has a show called Fight Church. You can watch it yourself. I mean, that's the same deal that they were doing at the pipeline when they were shooting the people with freezing water in the winter. Those people were never threatening them physically. It's the threat of just their nonviolent actions and their unity. The fact that people are uniting, that is so threatening to these forces.
That's why my daughter asked me if I was okay. She lives in Portland.
Yeah, it was very violent on the behalf of the police, not the people. The people didn't do anything. And I see that more and more and more as I've marched and as I've protested, and I like to believe I'm using my white privilege for the good by going up against these forces with that ingrained fear in us. I've said it before. I'm like, God, if I'm afraid, imagine what my sisters of color feel like right now. You know, because I've had the white privilege my whole life that's protected me, and it's not going to protect me anymore. But we still have to use it, and that is where it's at with these police and Trump. He very much so uses violence and fear, and he tries to divide us against one another, and he uses race, and he uses class, and he uses religion. And we have to stop it. And the only way we can stop it is to quit labeling each other. Quit labeling. Are you Republican? Are you Democratic? Are you Green? You know, did you vote for him? Did you not vote for him? I posted myself. I said, you know what? Some of you maybe voted for Trump, and I get that. I don't get that. But I'm still going to march for your rights, and I'm still going to fight for your rights, because I truly believe if one people is oppressed, all of us are oppressed.
Right.
And you can call that socialism, but I was raised like you, Lonnie. That's democracy. And that's right. How the people are in the power of taking care of one another. And that doesn't mean that everybody's going to eat the same meal and everybody's going to get the same doctor, but we all have the same opportunities to get those. Like, we have the opportunities to have housing. We have the opportunities to have education. We have the opportunities to have health care. And when I'm seeing this right now, I'm thinking also about just power, about electricity, and about how the nuclear science has taken over our power, our heating, and how, you know, you feel like you have to have electricity now, and so we sign up with our local power company. Well, our local power company gives money to Hanford.
Right.
We support Hanford.
Look, this is something that people need to remember. Our Constitution. George Bush took civics out of high schools on purpose so people don't know about our Constitution. The preamble of the United States says, "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility." Ensure domestic tranquility. That is a key thing. Ensure domestic tranquility. Provide for the common defense. Promote the general welfare and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States. This is the bottom line that we have, and you were right about the nuclear industry completely taking over the conversation. This is why they can dump, and Rick Perry, who has a Bachelor's of Arts degree, will now have his finger over the nuclear arsenal, who created one of the biggest disasters in Texas with nuclear waste by his mishandling and mismanagement of overseeing that while he was in Texas.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing an article about a truck who was going to a fracking site and dropped a rod, a radioactive rod. And they had to close the freeway to find the rod. And it literally took them like a day and a half to find this missing rod. And Rick Perry didn't want to tell people because he was afraid that he would get in trouble.
Right. Let's just don't tell them. I mean, this is the issue with Trump. I understand why people voted for Trump because they hated Hillary Clinton. Me too. I didn't vote for any of them. They were all disgusting. But I understand why people picked Hillary Clinton over Trump because she was, the good part about what happened with Trump being elected is we are done with the Clintons. And I am sick to death with the Democratic Party. We had 5 million people in the streets. And what did they immediately do? Bait us in with an online petition. Let's stand for Planned Parenthood because since Trump passed that global act where we no longer support poor people because God forbid, we might suggest that abortion might handle. Planned Parenthood does not pay for abortion, by the way. That is such a misconception. This video that's gone viral is going viral because it's being pushed out there on us. And so,
right, just like mass media, they can't control us by the evening news anymore, but they do know that we're getting our information from Facebook.
Well, and just so the lies of it all. I mean, it's beyond comprehension, and really, it is time for us to, women, this online media, just this thing that really just made me spit beans because it was like, at first ask for your email address and then you have only your first name and your zip code and then you click link and all of a sudden it's a pop-up page to a Democratic candidate who has done nothing but click her heels and say Sieg Heil. It is the Democratic Party using women once again. This is why women voted for Trump, because we're sick of being used by the fascists. The fascist party is the Democratic Party. They will not have, Keith Ellison is the best representative for the Democratic Party, and they're not going to get him. But you know why? Because he's black and because he's a Muslim. God forbid that they stand up for black people and Muslims in this country. That's the answer. I mean, honestly, they are the reason that we have Donald Trump as president right now. They preferred Donald Trump over Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I have to say I have family across the whole country, and I have some who voted for Trump, some who voted for Hillary, some who voted for neither. and it's just a reflection of how much lack of faith we have in our system.
No, it's not a lack of faith. What it is a lack of candidates. What we have is absolute corruption within our governmental system.
You're absolutely right, Lonnie. And it is. It's a faith in the corruption, that there is corruption. I mean, that's how I felt. I felt like the election was crooked. When people tell me that 70% of white women voted for Trump, I'm just like, I can't believe that number because
even if those
numbers are true, you know?
Where were the people, those 5 million people in the street on Saturday, where were they when Bernie Sanders had the primary? Literally 2 million people in New York City were scrubbed from the voter rolls by the Democratic Party. 2 million people. A million votes were taken in San Diego County. And, you know, I actually talked to Chuck Johnson the other day, and he says, well, I don't know about that. I don't know if I disagree. And I'm like, Chuck, do your homework. Don't just listen to the Democratic spew out their lies and say, we didn't do anything. You know what I did? I actually called the voter electoral process, what's it called, the Registrar of Voters in California, and asked him. I said, look, what's up with this? Did a million votes get counted or not in San Diego? They're like, ma'am, we can't talk to you about it. I said, well, I want to talk to your supervisor. Well, he can't talk to you about it either. I'm like, we're talking about elections. This should all be in there. They're like, well, actually, ma'am, we can't talk to you about it. So what did that tell me? That the million votes in California had been shredded. I mean, it is beyond, this is not a small, we have a cancer. You know, it's funny because the nuclear industry causes us all to get cancer and hurts our immune system. It destroys our system that helps us thrive. That's exactly what's happened to our nation. At the fundamental core level of every system in our nation, we have cancer. Our organs are ailing and failing. We have diabetes. I mean, this country is an ill, mentally ill, physically ill country. And this is why I guess I get so excited and can easily get on the radio every day, because we can heal ourselves. We can heal our body. We can heal our country, but only with correct thoughts and correct action.
And do not be gagged. Like, I will not be gagged. You cannot silence me. I don't care if the president says that you can't talk. I mean, I just saw that the National Parks Department was told that they were put on a gag order because they were afraid for their parks and losing funding for their parks, and they were posting things. Because you know how you said earlier in the show they had to come up with an alternative page?
Yes.
It's because he's taking that away. He's taking their voice away from them.
And scientists are planning their own march on Washington. This is what he doesn't get. He's making these wide sweeping changes that the Republican Party have wanted to impose on America for 40 years. And Americans are not having it. We're not having it.
Well, just like you said, it's a fundamental right that most, I would like to think, the majority of Americans believe in is American. And that's freedom of speech. And if you don't like what someone's saying, that's fine. You can either disagree, you can have a healthy dialogue, or you can ignore them. But you can't just discredit them. And that's what Trump does, is he just discredits anyone who doesn't agree with him and does what he wants. And he does it for money, and that's why he is a ruler of capitalism and not a ruler of democracy, and certainly not my president, because he doesn't represent me. He doesn't represent my people who care about the earth. Who believe the earth is more important than
money. Well, for God's sakes, if that's what you're going to say is our president, we haven't had a president since they killed JFK. Let's be real. He is our president.
That's true.
I mean, the reality is he is. I disagree with that language. Again, I don't mean to keep challenging you on this, but I disagree with that language.
Challenge.
Because really, he is our president, and what we need to do is force him to be more American and let him see that, you know, he's having a freaking meltdown because he's not in complete control. The president doesn't have as much control as he thinks he does. And so he thought he was going to go in there and do all this stuff, and I would hate to be Melania. I guarantee you she's happy she's not living in the White House. But the bottom line is this, is he is our president, Heidi. And you know what? He might be a bad president, but he's our president. Saying he's not our president is allowing ourselves to disassociate ourselves from the fact that this is our country, our system, our constitution. If we don't like what he's doing, then start a movement to if we're going to impeach him, let's please do impeach. See, this is the problem with Republicans. If we get rid of Trump, then we have the American Taliban in the form of Mike Pence. You get rid of Mike Pence, who is probably easily impeachable himself, because he's done not a lot of really great things. He's a very evil, behind the scenes kind of dirty doer. Then you have Paul Ryan as president. Like, could you imagine that? Like, seriously. I just hope to God that, you know.
I guess I should be seeing something like Not My System, you know, because it's just like, that's what I feel.
But we have to see that it's a corrupt system. We have to talk about the ultimate corruption, the illness, this whole thing with the nuclear industry. It has given our country a cancer. Since the World War II, they have been, frankly, since the beginning of the turn of the last century, it is an insidious, slow death that we have been seeing on our Constitution. The Unpatriot Act needs to be revoked, period. That's a first good step. And people need to start standing up for our Constitution. You know what? I beg your pardon, Heidi. I see that we've got like less than 30 seconds left. I apologize to you. You've been listening to...
It's good. It's good. And you're right. We need to talk about it. And we need to work together to take back our country.
That's right. It's our country. So people need... Please do put your courage feet on. You've been listening to Heidi Lampert with nonukesnw.org. Please go there. Thank you, Heidi, for joining us. Please put your courage feet on. Lean into this with peace and right action, folks. We'll talk to you soon. And no name calling.